Now, if there's one place people always seem to drift towards on St. Stephen's Day, it's the pub. Families reunited, friends back home, streets still quiet, and the doors opening on rooms filled with warmth, conversation, music, and memory. Is the Irish pub has never really just been about the drink. It's been a meeting place, a political space, a cultural hub, a refuge, and sometimes even a second sitting room. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Tara Duggan, and I hope you've all had a very happy Christmas. Now, today on St. Stephen's Day, we're coming to you from one of Dublin's most historic pubs, the Palace Bar. And we're asking why this particular day has always had such a strong relationship with the public house, how folk traditions, politics, literature and community all flowed through pubs, and what we lose when they disappear. Joining me here in the Palace Bar is social historian and podcaster Donal O'Fallon, author of The Dublin Pub, A Social and Cultural History, which was published earlier on the year. Donal, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Good to be here in the very familiar surroundings of the Palace Bar.
Very familiar.
Sitting in the snug, surrounded by familiar faces. I see Harry Kernoff up there and Con Houlihan, the Castle Island Colossus, and lots of departing friends.
So, it is, we are in auspicious surroundings, that's for sure, and it is St. Stephen's Day. It's always had a strong connection with the pub in Ireland. Why is that? Is it simply because we were shut out on Christmas Day?
I wonder. Well, I've just mentioned Con Houlihan from Castle Island in County Kerry. He always remembered this time of year as the great homecoming in Kerry. We were historically a nation of emigrants, and I think Christmas always meant the return of people to the parish. So the pub is the beating heart, isn't it, of every town and village in the country. Over the last 20 years, we've lost around a quarter of our public houses, which is extraordinary. We've gone from having around 8,600 pubs to 6,500. But for publicans, Christmas is a really, really important time. You know, if you can't make money in this game in December, you're in a sense a crisis. So for me, I think Christmas is the homecoming. It's the return of mostly the young, be it from the old places that we've always gone, be it London, New York, Australia, or be it just from Dublin back to rural Ireland. I think Christmas means the gathering of the tribes once again.
And before we even get to the drinking on Stephen's Day, there's the wren, there's the parades, the music, all of the noise. How have those folk traditions intersected, I suppose, with the pub through history?
I love the wren, or the ran, as some call it, yeah. And I've been fortunate enough with my good friend Porrigog O'Rourke, who's a brilliant historian from Munster, to go on the ram with him in Dangany Cooch and Dingle. And it's an extraordinary thing. The pubs are central to it. The town has its various different groups out for the day. The Green and Gold would go from O'Flaherty's pub, the Goat Street Ran, Shrod Owen. They'd all meet in their own local. And a pub would become the headquarters, if you will, of each band going out that day. That's a tradition that was once very alive in Dublin.
For those who don't know the tradition and aren't familiar with it, talk us through it.
Oh, it's a beautiful day. I mean, there's a lot of mystery around some of the traditions on that day, and folk. I love folklore and mythology and history, how these things meet and blend. But what you get is those beautiful straw costumes. And in Dangany Cooch, they would wear the straw hats over the face. And there's a great element of fun in that. You're not entirely sure who you're talking to. But the parts of Kerry, they would wear them like a hat on top of their head. But these traditions of like marching bands, fellas playing traditional music, parading behind the town banner, the street banner through the town, there's a lovely tribalness about it. There's a great sense of local playful rivalry in it. And you hear that song, The Old Comrades, it's known in Dingle. You hear it being struck up by a band as they make their way from house to house performing. The Ran, the King of All Birds, and Stephen's Day was caught in the furs. In Dublin, it existed too. It's come back in fashion, actually, in North County Dublin. Fingal Mummers have really brought it back. And the pubs are central to it in North County Dublin, just as they are down in Dingle. Irish Town, they're trying to revive it there, and there's been an effort towards doing that too. So people will remember this. I mean, my parents remember it in, of all places, suburban Ballyfermot, where the roads were named after places in the west of Ireland. But on Stephen's Day, the Ran would be done there too. So I'd love to see a further revival of it, but the pub is at the heart of it.
And Christmas Day, obviously, the pubs are closed. How unusual is that internationally? Why are the pubs, right? I mean, we've even had Good Friday, which was always the traditional, the second day of the year when the pubs were not open for business. But that's gone.
Yeah, anyone who watches the English soaps will know that it's always a very dramatic day in Soapland, Christmas Day. Anything could happen in the Rover's return on Christmas Day. There is a tradition on the neighbouring island of pubs opening for just a few short hours on Christmas Day. Here, things are different. I think there's a couple of factors for that. Obviously, the historic nature of the country and its religious faith. But also, I think it was pubs were a very unionised trade at one point. Since I was giving a talk on the book to a local history society, and a man said, did you write about the Bamba Hall men? Nobody went by Bamba Hall. Bamba Hall was the trade union hall on Parnell Square for the victims. And I think as much as anything, it was a good unionised job. Walk into Mulligan's pub on Pilbeg Street, the sign is still behind the bar. This is a trade union pub. So in a well-organised part of the labour market, I think publicans were able to say, we don't actually want Christmas Day, and we don't want Stephen's Day. And for me, Good Friday, while on one level people were glad to see the back of it, the ban on pubs that day, there were very interesting ways of getting around it.
Certainly were. Engaged in a few of them over the years.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to a train station and the trains would be booked out, but there'd be no one on them.
Yeah.
You know, there's all kinds of tricks to get around Good Friday. I was kind of sad, actually, with the opening of pubs on Good Friday, because it was another day off in what is a very difficult trade to work in, said the former lounge boy. So I can understand from a labour point of view why we have those days where the pubs aren't open and it's a day off.
And it was a day, I think, when a lot of publicans, particularly Good Friday, would have gone in themselves and done a lot of, you know, redecoration and done the proper deep clean and stuff like that. Now, as an excuse for maybe staying
there and having a I know many a man who pretended to be an electrician on Good Friday.
Now, in your book, you describe it as Ireland's great third space. What do you mean by that?
I suppose our lives are defined by three spaces. One is the home, one is the workplace, and then what is there beyond that? And I think for every village, town and city in the country, for a long time, for a century, the pub was undeniably that third space. If it still is, I don't know. And as I mentioned, the numbers are quite staggering. I mean, if a quarter of it had closed across the island of Ireland in just 20 years, people would sit up and pay attention to that. Publicans are quite anxious about it, and there is a campaign that the Vintners Federation and others are looking for UNESCO status for our pubs, intangible heritage, that the pub would be recognised as something of social and cultural importance by UNESCO. I think about it, for an island so small, I mean, Dublin is a UNESCO World City of Literature. Belfast up the road is a UNESCO World City of Music. In both cases, the pub is vitally important to those stories. So for me, you cannot have any cultural understanding of the island of Ireland without having a sense of a public house and its role as that great other space in our lives.
And when most people might think simplistically the pub is about drink, it's really not the case.
It's really not the case. I mean, what is a pub? I mean, even the name public house, even in that you have a sense of the communal, don't you? The place where the public gather. They're known as public house. I mean, the Victorians really created what we would know as the pub. Going back, you had taverns and you had alehouses in the 17th and 18th centuries, but they were fairly unregulated. They opened when they wanted and they closed when they wanted. They served who they wanted. The Victorians put real shape on the industry around licensing laws and things like that. And the pub, as we know it, comes into its own in the Victorian age. And we still have many of the trappings of what they consider to be a good pub. And we're sitting in one dimension of that now in Snug. But for me, the fact that you stretch it out the public house, you really get a sense that it's a community pub. It's a place where the public gather. And many of those 19th century pubs were literal houses that had been converted into these shared spaces. So anyone who goes to Keogh's, for example, in the heart of Dublin, or the upstairs in the Lord Edward was once the dining room of the man who owned the pub. So you're often in what was a house in a former life.
And I've seen that myself in areas in County Clare and in Dingle, as you mentioned earlier on as well. There's still an element of that that exists outside as well, where people still actually live in the back room.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm in pubs as service providers of a whole range of things. Undertakers, for example.
Yeah.
There are pubs in rural Ireland where there are, you know, still coffins stacked in the back room of the premises. Pubs as all kinds of things. Grocers, most famously. And you walk into many Victorian pubs around the country and you'll still see behind the bar where tea would have been sold, for example, from those lovely cresses, pubs as hardware shops, another big one. And we're even seeing fake pub hardware shops, like Mary's, for example, in Dublin, tried to tap into that nostalgic feeling. So publicans were often doing something else in the community. They were the undertaker, or they were the DIY man, or whatever it might be.
No, you wrote beautifully about pubs being political spaces as well.
Yeah, which is extraordinary. But I mean, often, not just in an Irish context, pubs are places where you might call them the parliament of the people. You know, at a time when politics was very much not something that ordinary people engaged in. For example, in the late 18th century, the tavern was vitally important to the American Revolution. People were meeting in Boston and talking about Tom Paine's pamphlets. In Ireland, the United Irishmen very much emerges out of, I wouldn't call them pubs because there weren't pubs yet, but taverns, like the Eagle Tavern. And the United Irishmen had a great drinking culture. They would often raise toasts at the end of their meetings. One of the popular ones was the spirit of the French mob for the people of Ireland. And Tom Paine always, or pardon me, Wolfe Tone always enjoyed the toast, the King George the Last, which had a great optimism and hopefulness to it. But it was a place, I suppose, where men could talk about politics. That's how it was in the 18th century. In the 19th century, the Fenian movement really doesn't find its place recruiting in pubs and in snubs like this one. The Long Hall, for example, is a very well-established Fenian alt. In fact, we have a mugshot of the former proprietor of the Long Hall, because he managed to get himself arrested in 1867, the year of the Fenian Rising. So pubs lend themselves to talk, don't they? We talk about pub talk,
yes.
Which means nonsense talk, but serious talk could happen as well. And the Bureau of Military History, the first-hand testimonies of the hundreds and hundreds of men and women who spoke about what they did in the Irish Revolution, the very snug that we're in now, is mentioned in the Bureau of Military History. The talk about Collins being here, meetings. Every pub will claim like the Collins was in it, but the Bureau gives us first-hand recollections of where he was, and we know he was in this snug.
That politics though wasn't always celebrated, per se. You know, leaders like James Larkin faced distrusted publicans.
Absolutely. I mean, Larkin would joke that the workers of Dublin would live to see grass grow over the Guinness Brewery. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But there was a tradition on the left that was very, very hostile to the pub. For example, men who worked in the docks were often paid in pubs. And how much of that money made it back home to struggling mothers and children?
Yeah.
Larkin was a teetotaler, as was James Connolly. Kind of ironic, there's a pub on the Keys today called the James Connolly, which I don't think he'd be honoured by. But that moment in the labour movement, there was a real sense that the pub was harmful to the working class. And you had a whole countercultural moment on the left across Britain and Ireland. You had things like the Clarion Cycle Club or the Left Wing Book Club, or the Liberty Hall had a Gaelic football team and had a theatre. They're trying to get men, especially men, out of the pub and to refocus their lives.
One of the threads in your book is that pubs really are defined by the people, not the decor. You know, why does that matter so much? The characters and the people that were frequented.
I mean, with the crisis in the number of pubs in the country at the moment, it strikes me there's a very aesthetic thing happening on Instagram, which is look at the snow, look at the counter, look at the fireplace. And it's the adoration of a handful of premises, and it's an obsession with how pubs look. But ultimately, I think what's more important about pubs than the snugs and the counters and the advertising mirrors is the people. Because if there are not people in a licensed premises, it will fade away, it will fall away. So for me, it was important to celebrate the figures behind the bar. For example, the front of the book, Miss Cooney, who ran the Brazen Beds, and she was a very formidable character in her day, but she managed to oversee a very important place in the ballad boom, in that moment when folk and traditional music really took hold. And I wanted to put someone from behind the bar on the front of the book. I mean, I'm sure when people hear there's a book called The Dublin Pub, they expect that image of Brendan Behan stumbling out the door, don't they, on the front of it. But I wanted to celebrate the men, and particularly the women, who hold up these institutions, who run them often intergenerationally through families.
We'll come back to women in pubs in a moment, but you mentioned Brendan Behan there. Figures like Brendan Behan, figures like Con Houlihan, they're an intrinsic part of Dublin pub history. Why is that?
Absolutely. I mean, Con is perhaps the most commemorated man in Dublin pub land. There's one of his great articles from the Evening Press. He has a bust in Mulligan's on Pilbeg Street, lovely lines by John B. Keane. He said something to the effect of, we played rugby against each other and we drank pints of water together. We were good at one and excelled at the other, which is a fine tribute. An image of him in chaplains, a statue in the bank, the dropping well. I'm definitely missing a few. And behind the bar here, a bust of Conn's head and immortal words, a bird is known by its song, a man by his conversation. I remember seeing Conn as a kid. My father brought me down to watch St. Patrick's Athletic for the first time in the late 90s. Conn's a Pats man. There was this towering figure standing on the Camac, but you'd see him in the Horse and Jockey or McDowell's or around the pubs of each car. I was always amazed by his stamina. It was up early in the morning. He said he got up at 4:30 in the morning. That's when he liked to write. He'd be in the early houses of the city, the White Horse being his favourite around the corner from Mulligan's. And then he'd still be there by the time of kick-off, which was just extraordinary. But he had the stamina to go through the day. But I think the secret for Conn was brandy and milk.
Excuse me?
Brandy and milk.
Never heard of brandy in port. Or, never heard of brandy
as
and
Roy,
milk.
Roy Curtis corrected me recently and said, it's not brandy and milk, it was brandy and goat's milk. And when he was asked about it, Conn, he said that the brandy took the sting out of the milk. Just, which is a great observation. But he very warmly remembers Conn right across the city. Conn, I think, was obsessed with people. His column, there are shout-outs to taxi drivers and publicans and people he met on the street. His columns often end with, I'm looking at one right here, Fogra. That will be an announcement of some kind or a hello to a friend. He loved people. And I think he regarded the pub as, going back to that point, the parliament of the people, where you met people and talked.
Brendan Behan as well, we mentioned it there. I mean, central to Dublin of pub folklore.
Absolutely. And you know, once described to me by a friend who knew him well as a great man to the fourth pint. Behan could be a difficult character at times, but he had a great warmth about him as well. And he was a hero in the community that he came from. He writes very movingly about Guild's pub on Russell Street. In fact, when he's a schoolboy, he writes a beautiful little poem about Gills, which was at the end of Russell Street. Of course, they were moved out to suburbia. His quip was, there's no such thing as suburbia, only Siberia. But I think he felt much better being, rather than being stuck in what the house was known as the Crumlin Kremlin, colloquially. I think he felt more at home in the pubs of the city. And he writes brilliantly about the pubs. Like Conn, actually, Behan had a newspaper column. This was in the Irish Press. And often it's the people he encounters week to week in places like the Wren's Ness pub that he loved in the Strawberry Beds. So a wonderful writer about the public house, someone who got the public house, caught a difficult character in some ways too. I mean, we think about these people, Flann O'Brien, Patrick Kavanagh, Brendan Behan, they're all knocking around at the same time. That doesn't mean they're friends. there's a real tension there. And John Jordan, a livery critic, once said that it's not that the livery jungle of Dublin was worse than any other city. It's just that the jungle was smaller and the animals kept bumping into each other. It's a very hard city to hide from someone in, and the tension between characters like Beatty and Kavanagh could be very real.
Now, Tara and Donal sound very comfortable there in the Palace Bar snug, so why don't we leave them in peace to enjoy a pint or two and pick up the conversation with them on Monday's News Talk Daily. The Dublin Pub, A Social and Cultural History by Donal Fallon, is published by New Ireland.